Hey, Stellar Woman and eDiscovery fans. I'm Mary Rectoris, your host of Stellar Woman and eDiscovery.
And I'm your co-host, Mila Taylor. Stellar Women and eDiscovery shines a light on female leaders making their mark in eDiscovery.
So today we're really excited to introduce our guest from Australia.
Mary, I was on the podcast last time.
Mila, this is our guest. You are the Dwight to my Michael, my fellow co-host.
Sorry, Mary.
But while we're on this topic, I have a funny tidbit for our listeners. In Chicago here, it's about 7:30. And when I was asking Mila where she was recording, she said she was recording at me.
At me.
Yeah,
recording at my apartment, at me, where I belong.
I was very confused. I thought maybe there was a new restaurant in Chicago or a new coffee shop I didn't know about. So I would like to turn the floor over to our guest, who's also from Australia, to see, is this a cultural thing or is Mila just making up her own language? So without further ado, I want to welcome Joanne Chav Robinson from Deloitte. Joanne, hello. Can you help us weigh in here a little bit?
Hi, Mary. Hi, Mila. No, I can't. And I think when I was asked that question, I was just quite surprised that I didn't know, but I thought that was actually me, meaning myself, not understanding what me is because it's a generational difference. So I just put it down to that. I don't think I'm weighing in heavily at all. I just don't know what that is. I'm looking forward to finding out.
So listeners, if you are in the same boat as Joanne and I, that at me does not ring a bell, let us know. Or if you're with Mila, where at me means your home or apartment or wherever you reside, we're really interested in this little slang we have here. So let us know.
Maybe I've just created a language. I could be onto something.
Yeah,
I think so. I really do. Good.
Wow, this is great. All right. I guess we'll just jump in and we can switch gears a bit. So, Joanne, can you tell us a bit more about your role at Deloitte?
So, at Deloitte, I'm a senior manager working in Deloitte's e-discovery and forensic technology practice. So, what that means is that my role involves primarily working with clients. It's all about data. You know, it's to identify it, manage it, review it, analyze it, all manner of data. In discovery litigation primarily, but also investigation and regulatory inquiry.
Awesome. And Joanne, when we talked previously, you told me you started out before going into e-discovery and journalism.
Yeah, that was when mostly data was hard copy. So once again, generational. Yeah, so electronic data is, you know, what we're in now. But back in the day, and I'm talking about sort of the early 90s, I've always been a cause-driven person. So I've always wanted to seek truth and fight for justice. So that's my sort of personal take on wanting to go into journalism. I was also determined to write and present stories on a commercial news channel, but also from a different perspective. And that is from the norm, which is still predominantly white male Anglo-Saxon. So what this means is people in the news, sort of news leaders or news producers who essentially dictate the agenda and sort of put out what's actually important. So ironically, in that day and age, 90s Australia was not ready to have an Asian face on television. So my background is Singaporean Chinese. So I came to a small rural town in Australia during the late 80s. So when it came to university and doing journalism and then wanting to actually make a difference, ironically, Australian news channels were not ready for an Asian face on telly. And I was told that quite matter-of-factly as well by a news producer. But what I did appreciate was that he was upfront in his decision. So he didn't beat around the bush. He didn't say that, we just don't have any openings at the time or anything of the usual stuff you hear. And also chose not to waste my time by just telling me exactly why he couldn't hire me. So that's why I went into it. And that's why I pretty much sort of stepped out of it at the time.
How did you react when he told you that? Obviously, you admired his honesty, but that's pretty a hard thing to hear.
Yeah, it was, because I was quite young, very impressionable, very, very determined. It was quite a blow to the self-esteem. So it took a while to actually overcome that. But, you know, I'm still doing what I'm doing. So it, you know, deep down, it's always going to be there. So you might have people who may not necessarily support you along the way, but there are so many more who are. But unfortunately, some of these people are not in the places that can actually give you a go or give you the opportunity to make that difference. So at the time, yes, it was crushing, but I think you learn from that. And I think, as I said, you know, I did appreciate his honesty, and I'm glad I didn't waste more time, you know, basically knocking on closed doors. So it's definitely built character. And then going forward, it's just given me a different perspective and probably even more determination to make a difference.
And after, when you transitioned out of journalism, you went to law school, right? How did that decision come to fruition?
Well, law school was always going to be my second to journalism. And I think it was one of those fail-safe decisions where, okay, well, if I can't do this, I will just fall back on this. And the law has always been a very traditional route in a career. And I just thought that this was something that could be a good safety net as I progressed through my own career. But also, it lends itself very well to knowing what laws are out there, what is the system of justice, and also how to work within institution as well. So to help others, you know, bring forward their claims and fight for them as well. So it was very much still within my purview of what I was interested in doing.
And I think having that journalistic background isn't common necessarily for law school or e-discovery.
Yeah, I found that, because a lot of what journalism teaches you is how to write things in plain language, how to make complex concepts, how to write them in a simple way so that the layperson can understand, and also to look at the situation from both sides, so impartiality as well. I think both sides, both types of careers have pros and cons. This has all led to me supporting and being quite an active participant in the diversity and inclusion strategy at Deloitte as well. That strategy aims to focus on fostering an inclusive culture. So from what I've experienced in trying to get into being a journalist in commercial news, but also, you know, issues as well, and just trying to get into a prominent law firm, similar sort of issues which I had experienced. It's now sort of turned into sort of more of a fight for just, you know, diversity and inclusion, which promotes people from all different backgrounds and religions and diversity of opinion even to reach their full potential.
You mentioned that things have changed with diversity and inclusion over time. I'd like to hope it's progressed. Do you think it's progressed a lot? Do you think there's still a lot of room to grow? Kind of where do you think Australia in particular stands today?
I think at the moment it's kind of a little bit divergent. So you've got a few, well, actually probably more than a few people with quite extremist views, but I think that's happening globally as well. Sort of this reaction to, you know, people of different colors and backgrounds. But also at the same time, you also have this surge of views that are very, very inclusive as well, because I think we're starting to see that innovation and opportunity actually springs from people who are diverse, that in getting ahead, especially in technology and innovation, you need to be creative. You need to be different. And I think standing out is no longer a bad thing. You actually have the edge.
Totally. And I think just like emotion and human intelligence aside, it's more, there's a business need. I think there's tons and tons of research that shows the more diverse a team is, the more backgrounds and opinions on the team, the more successful that team is. So whether someone from their heart believes, I want a more diverse team, or someone's business minded, either way, there's a really strong case for more diverse teams. So it's cool to see that there's big progress and leaps being made.
Yeah, and the more we have different people, especially in teams working together directly, it becomes, you know, almost a petri dish of cultural sort of interactions, which then lends itself to growing in a diverse way, an inclusive way as well.
Mila and I actually, we went to a workshop this last week that just talked about ways you can be more inclusive. And I think something is cultural differences. So Mila can attest a little bit to this, and I'm sure you can, Joanne, as well. Where in America, people are applauded for kind of speaking out and dominating the conversation, where that's not necessarily the norm in Australia. Isn't that right, Mila, where it's almost frowned upon?
No, it's more, so Australia, it's like the term is like tall poppy syndrome. I, for a long time, have almost been afraid to stand out as ahead of anyone. No one wants to say, I'm the best at this, I'm the best at that. There's kind of this, like, you want to kind of be the same as everyone else. Whereas in America, I found it's almost the opposite. In this workshop, it was just like bringing light all these different cultural norms and expectations. And it was just so interesting to hear from different people how this can be perceived and how without even realizing you could be more inclusive or how you can or how you are currently being exclusive.
Yeah, I find the same way, Mila. And I think, you know, pros and cons, I guess. But yeah, there's definitely that cultural difference in Australia where people don't want to stick out too much. But, you know, the disadvantage is that perhaps, you know, we're not going to be able to lead if we don't sort of put our views out there, especially creative thinking and, you know, innovation. We need to lead.
Right. And I also think that that idea is paralleled between men and women often. And I think men have no, it's a generalization, but for a lot of the time, men have no problem standing out, whereas women tend to, for whatever reason, not want to say, I should lead this team. I'm the best to lead this team, when they very well could be.
I think what women tend to do is they start to think, how do I best support these views by, let's say, research that I might have done or my work experience and things like that in order to support these views? Well, men may not necessarily think that way, and they just say, well, I support these views without necessarily needing to back it up.
This is really interesting to me. I think, Joanne, what have you found in the industry if you are presenting your views as a woman? Do you find that that's been perceived well? Do you feel like you have to toe a line?
Oh, it's funny actually, because when I started in the industry, which was in the late 90s, that was actually more female dominated at the time. So think scanning machines, lots of hard copy. It was called litigation support. So essentially anything that was hard copy, we would scan. Electronic data was quite sparse, but it was there. We put things on CDs. We even got things on CDs as well. We had to process them. And there was a lot of manual barcoding, which is putting stickers on pieces of paper. So it was quite interesting and riveting, putting it in a really, really nice way. And at the time, it was actually incredibly female dominated. It was mostly female. I don't think I even recall any males in my team. It was until it became more electronic, I think probably towards the early 2000s, that we began to see more data scientists, analysts sort of getting into this kind of area, but not directly into discovery. I think even the term e-discovery didn't come along till around that time as well. So that was still a very new term. It just used to be called discovery litigation. For whatever reason, I think men are attracted to electronic data more than perhaps the processing of hard copy data. And it's become more of a game of computers and who's got the best algorithms to analyze and interpret data.
That's really interesting.
And from my own personal experience, though, in litigation and in e-discovery as compared to my previous attempts at other careers, I haven't actually found any discrimination in terms of gender in where I've been in e-discovery. That has been an incredible positive. I normally don't realize I'm the only person perhaps in a meeting who's a woman until I sort of then look at myself and start introspecting. So compared to, let's say, being in a top-tier firm as a lawyer and also trying to get into a commercial news channel as a journalist, I think I really felt like I really stood out a lot more than, in a negative way, than, let's say, where I've been in litigation support or / e-discovery.
So I think, Mila, since you both are from Australia, I can let you take over.
Yes, Australia is a big place. People in the States like don't quite understand that. Australia is just about the same size as the States. So I am sure you and I had a very different growing up experience. So you touched on what your early career was like, but could you share just what growing up in Australia was like for you?
Okay, so I moved from Singapore, which is a busy Asian city, to a country town in rural Australia in late 80s. So most of the reason why we moved, yeah, was family reasons, wanting to be closer to family. A lot of my maternal side, so the grandmother's side, had actually moved across due to just progressive people migrating either for work or for personal reasons. So we just all wanted to be together. And it just happens to be a rural town. Now, being the only Asian female in high school, it was definitely hard to go unnoticed. So there were times where I just didn't want to be noticed. And also I had very traditional tiger parents, which are very typical coming from Singapore. They're just like a dime a dozen. But when you put that in a country town in rural Australia where everybody was so laid back, it was very difficult to assimilate. And I just felt different all the time. So, you know, you can sort of take it as a good thing that people always notice you. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to get into trouble without getting noticed. But it was also sometimes not a good thing because there were a lot of very sort of not very inclusive views, especially in high school. And high school is generally difficult for most young Australians anyway, you know, trying to fit in, all those hormones raging, and right. also just trying to get good grades to get into university. It was always going to be a tough time, but I thought it was actually quite difficult.
I feel like high school, everyone just wants to not stand out. Like, that's the goal at the end of the day. He's like, go to school, get your work done, and not stand out. So I can imagine that to be pretty tough.
Yeah, Australia or the U.S., you always just feel a little out of place. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I can imagine, especially from the different background, and Mila's pretty chill, so Australia being more relaxed and your parents being more how a lot of parents were where I grew up, just very dedicated to school and kind of on you to kind of get those grades. It was probably a lot different.
Like having a study session was just such a weird thing to even suggest.
Wow, that sounds nice.
And that would be the only thing that my parents would probably agree to if I invited friends over, was to do a study session. Yeah, so generally quite a tough time, but it was great then eventually getting out and going to university.
Where did you go to university?
First degree I did at the University of Newcastle. At the time, there were two universities, Charles Sturt or University of Newcastle, to do journalism. So it was quite a new thing. Not many universities actually offered it. Law school, I did it at the University of New South Wales in Sydney.
Oh, cool. I actually worked at the University of New South Wales for like a number of years. I worked at Student Central. I was at the desk.
Wow.
I was answering phones all day.
Wow. What year was that? Was that in the early 2000s?
Yep, exactly.
We could have run into each other. That's amazing.
Why? If you lost your student ID, you would have come, I would have been your gal. What are some of the things that you loved at university, just during that time period and beyond?
I think at university was a great time for myself, but also I think a lot of people enjoyed university. It's because I think when you break out of high school, you get to really focus on what you're actually interested in doing. And university gives you that further exposure, but also the focus and time to explore what interests you and to go niche into a particular subject area that you're wanting to study a little bit more of. Australia, I find, is such a diverse country. And I think university opened my eyes to that, because after growing up in a rural town, going to a bigger city, it was still not the city, but it was a bigger city. But already you could see that there was people from different cultures, international students as well, which I didn't get any glimpse of as to where when I grew up. But also the different courses that people studied, you know, it was so different, so many different varieties. And what I love about Australia as well is, I think, typical slogan that you do hear when you live in Australia, and it's this thing called give it a go. Now, I think, Mila, you'll probably hear that more than you would, Mary, but what it just means is that it's just having an opportunity to explore something. And that's what give it a go means. So people are just willing to look at something perhaps in a new way, or just test something out, do something differently without fear of any sort of failure or repercussion, but just giving it a go. And it's an incredibly positive slogan that we have in Australia. And I think growing up, that was the first time I heard it, when I moved to Australia. And it's still something that I say a lot myself, but also that I just feel if we were to promote that a little bit more, diversity and inclusion policies, I think it would really make it Australian, something different that we can offer the world.
I agree. And when you just said that, I can like just hear my dad in the back of my head just telling me to give it a go, no matter what it is. So sent like a warm shiver down my body.
Oh, I'm using it now too. It won't sound as cool when I say it, but I have permission from you guys. I'm giving
Yeah, I agree 100% with all that. There's definitely that, like, yeah, have a crack, give it a go, and that's what it's all about.
Mm. And it's funny, isn't it? Because I think earlier we talked about the tall poppy syndrome. You've got that, but then you've also got all these, like, the other term I wanted to mention is egalitarianism, which is mm-hmm. the first time I heard when I moved to Australia, which is something about, you know, having a level playing field for everybody, having a fair go, which is like the same opportunity for all. So that is quite contradictory to the tall poppy syndrome, where you don't want to stick out, you know. So at the same time, when we sort of say that we have all these niggling sort of differences or negativities that Australia may be known for, but there's also all these positives as well that don't get celebrated enough. So egalitarianism, having a go, giving it a go, having a fair go, all these things, I think we really should be exporting to the rest of the world.
How can we as an industry elevate emerging leaders in this space and encourage people to take on leadership roles in e-discovery?
I think it's so important to develop like a company-wide sponsorship program, which actively targets emerging female leaders within their teams. So not promoting from outside, but promoting from inside, and actually seek out opportunities to showcase their leadership potential. I've taken a lot of time to actually work out what is the difference between a sponsor and a mentor. So a mentor is really great, you know, as someone that you can actually bounce ideas off, who supports you in, you know, your endeavors and your career. But the difference with a sponsor is that they can actually have effect on your real, on your career direction in where you are. So they actually have the power to actually promote you or to seek out very influential people that can then also support you in your career. So I'm currently in a program at Deloitte, which is basically that, and it's called Aspiring Women 2019. So I was selected to be part of that program just this year. And this is something I'm really relishing it. And it's just amazing. Really grateful to be selected. I didn't say I would. So a lot of the time, like we just spend our lives just working away at the pressing deadline or something that you have to give to a client. But this gives you that opportunity to focus on yourself and look at what is your capability? Where are your strengths? What can you actually do to contribute to the organization? So such a program, I think, is incredibly important.
Awesome. So, Duranne, this was really, really fun.
Yeah, I've had a really great time.
And with that, for Stellar Women in eDiscovery, I'm Mila Taylor.
And I'm Mary Rick Torres. Signing off.
Signing off.
Mila, you missed it.